Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Millionaire Real Estate Agent Podcast. I'm Jason Abrams, and this is the place where we lift the curtain on the world of real estate like never before. Every week, I sit down with visionaries, pirates, and mavericks. We're here to document, demonstrate, and most importantly, demystify their game-changing models and systems. What secrets propel them to the top, and how are they living their dreams? This is about passion, it's about strategy, but above all, it's about real, tangible success. So buckle up and let's dive in. This is the Millionaire Real Estate Agent Podcast. Friends, thank you for being here. Today, we are going to travel back in time and then hit 88 miles an hour and go directly into the future. How are we going to do that, you ask? We're going to do it with none other than Rosie Rourke. Now, Rosie began her career in 1985. I just want to set the stage for you. Let me take you back. Teen Wolf was in the theaters. The Breakfast Club was just coming out, and We Are the World was the soundtrack. The realtor was Rosie Rourke. She was starting her farm area in 1985, and today it is not just living, friends, it is thriving. We are going to talk about all things real estate with a special focus on how do I think about a farm, how do I build a farm, and how do I make sure that a business lasts over time. Buckle up, get ready, hang on tight. This is Rosie Rourke. And today I am joined by a dear friend, Rosie Rourke. Rosie, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, Jason. It's so good to see you.
It is an honor for us to have you. There are few people in the country with as recognizable a name and who sell as many homes as you all do. And I want to talk about that. But before we get there, I'd like to go back to the beginning. Rosie, how did you end up in the greatest industry in the world?
And that was a huge compliment coming from you. So thank you. I'm humbled by that. So it started in 1985, and I was fresh out of high school. And I knew I wanted to do real estate. I just had it in my mind. But I took a path that was commercial real estate, doing tenant representation. So I was working with corporations and businesses and had the best training from the top agencies in the nation. I had 3 years in Los Angeles with Travers Realty. He's still a very good friend of mine today. And then John Toit, who's also still a dear friend of mine in Seattle, Washington. So for 10 years, I did that mostly on the admin side and project management.
Okay. I want to go back because that's the old like yada, yada, yada 10 years later routine, which I love. Don't get me wrong. But you said I was finishing high school and I just knew I wanted to be in real estate. That's not computing for me. What was going through you? Because when I finished high school, I didn't know anything. How did you know what you wanted your life quest to be?
You know, I did fall into it. I had a boyfriend at the time who was set on commercial real estate. And so I started to dig in to learn a little more about it, reading books about it. And I did like the sound of it, but I liked more so the residential part of it. But I wasn't confident enough, commission only at that point. I was young, naive, and I knew I'd rather work with families, not companies. I'd rather work with homes and architecture and design, interior design, more so than here's the office, what tenant improvements can we do? But don't get me wrong, it was fascinating. It was.
Was there a bucket of things or one or two things that you learned in the commercial business that have served you well in the residential side?
I definitely think the communication, follow-up, learning from the presidents of these large corporations and how their mind ticked, how they negotiated. I think there were valuable insights into commercial real estate that I could pick so many things out of that served me well today.
Okay, so now it's 95 and you're making the transition into residential. What was the catalyst for that?
Well, I didn't even really know I was going to make the catalyst until this happened. So Mike and I got married in 95 and we bought our first house together, and we need two mortgages to buy that. I mean, two salaries to make this mortgage work. Brand new construction, model home. I didn't know anything about residential real estate at all. And I just feel like we didn't get a fair shake. We didn't have anybody looking out for us. It was the builder rep, that model home person that was there. We didn't know. We should have our own agent. We didn't know the education behind the contract. We didn't have any communication. I had to call them all the time saying, what's going on? I thought, God, there's got to be a better way. And we wanted to start a family. And I thought, what better way than transition now and be close to home, work, close to home, where eventually when we have our children that I could be a PTA mom and volunteer and then really have my love of community brought into real estate as well, and families. And so my husband luckily said, let's do it. Let's take a leap of faith. I'm confident you can do it. I was confident I can do it. So I got my confidence 10 years later, but I got it. And I jumped in with both feet and it worked.
I think it's so incredible to me, the number of people that say, you know, I was going to start a family. I thought I would kind of do this. I would be flexible. And then you build these multi-million dollar conglomerates out of it.
Yes.
That's so wild to me. Okay, so you get in. Do you have immediate success?
Yes, I do, because I knew I had to. I had no other choice. We just bought a home. We just got married. I had no choice. And I worked my tail off. I was working 100-hour weeks. It was no life. And then I lifted my head up at the end of the year, and I think I sold 39 homes my first year. I did all the things people told me to do, and I loved it, but I had no life. How am I going to start a family if I don't even see my husband?
No, I'm keeping that. We're keeping that.
So that's when I realized I needed leverage. And did I want to have and build a big team and have a big business like I do now? That is the furthest from what I wanted. I just wanted to be little old me and being PTA mom, and but have the time to be able to do that. So I started a team my first year in the business, you know, starting my second year in, and needed the leverage to help. And it just went from there. So I think when you asked me, what could I learn from my 10 years of commercial business? I learned you're going to run your business as a business. There's time for fun. And then there's time where you got to put your head down and work. And so but I also felt like I didn't have a direction, and I'm doing things out of need and not planning ahead. I wish I knew Keller Williams back then. I worked for a competing brokerage for 25 years, and 3.5 years later, I finally went to KW. And the models, hello, that's what I needed. The MREA models, the One Thing book, and that's what catapulted me.
You know, it's so interesting, because if you're new to this show, so we're called the Millionaire Real Estate Agent Podcast. The namesake for our show is a book that was written by Gary Keller, Jay Papazan, and Dave Jenks, may he rest in peace, called The Millionaire Real Estate Agent. And it laid out a set of models by how anybody who had a real estate practice could end up turning it into a real estate business. Mm-hmm. The organizational models, the budget models, the lead generation models. And Rosie, almost everyone that we've had on this program talks about, when I found those models, everything clicked.
When I found those models, everything
clicked. You said that first year, I worked like crazy. I was working 100-hour weeks. I sold 39 homes. What is the work of the work in that first year? How do you sell 39 homes that first year? Everyone out there that just got their license, give them 1 minute from Rosie on how to win in year one.
Okay, so cell phones were invented the year, basically, I started real estate. I had the big brick phone.
You have the Zach the Morris big
one. Yeah, I felt really cool with my car phone. My dad was like, what is that? And I had the MLS book with one grainy black and white photo that was 30 days out. And it was, you know, so you hustled. You had to hustle. And I built my business on open houses for sale by owners. When I got a little bit of money, I was able to advertise in these real estate magazines, which were really effective back then, not now. The internet wasn't even around yet. So we had to go, I wore all the hats. I did the transaction coordinating. I did my own marketing and my own flyers and my own listing paperwork. And I did all the things. So I feel like it was an amazing training ground for me, because I played all of the positions on the baseball field, and I'm able to train people based on my knowledge and experience.
I love that. As you look up today, what's the thing that y'all do so well? What's the engine behind this juggernaut that you've built?
If you ask me that question, the first thing that comes to my mind is my farm. And I don't want that to turn some people off, because I get it. It takes time, and it's blossoming to this day, and the farm is blooming. So it's been 20 years in the making. I stumbled across it. Nobody really told me about a farm. I just organically did it. So I feel that if we have our listeners listening to this podcast, I want them to know they can take pieces of what we do for a successful farm for their successful business. It doesn't have to be, oh, this farm is going to take forever. It took her 20 years. It didn't take 20 years. You know that. But now here I am, you know, receiving the fruits of my farm, so to speak.
Well, you know, we've made the argument. And by the way, we're going to take you in a minute step by step on how to create a successful farm. But I want to implore everyone listening, the math on this, the investment you'll make in a geographic area over time are the single greatest returns in the entire real estate business. That's what I believe based on the math. Because I believe over time, Rosie, this farm becomes your sphere of influence, whether it's with you personally or your brand. These are your people.
These are my people. And when people say, how much business do you get from your farm? I say, that's a complicated question, because my friends have become in my farm, and I'm intermixed in here. And my business to business relationships are intermixed because they're in my farm, and I would have never known them if they weren't in my farm.
Okay, take me through it. What's first?
Recognizable brand. You need to be recognizable. So it can't just be your name. You should have a logo, a color, a font that you consistently use throughout everything. Your social media, your website, your listing presentation, your flyers, your sign. Everything's going to be your color, your font, your logo. That way,
branding
they see
matters.
It, yeah. And then after a while, they're going to say, gosh, I see you everywhere. Not really. It's just I'm advertising a lot of different places and I have some signs up, but they perceive me as being everywhere because they see the brand.
I love that. Brand is number one. What's step number two?
Find a community that is manageable and profitable. So if you have like at least 50 homes to start with, that's very manageable. And then you can grow and add on from there. And when you add on a farm, be adjacent to your farm that you picked. So I'm going to give an example. I live in Fairwood Greens, the neighborhood. And next door to Fairwood Greens is Fairwood West and Fairwood Crest and Fairwood Furs, et cetera, et cetera. I have grown now to sending out 8,000 pieces to what I call my farm, but starting with 50. And as you get successful, grow, grow, grow.
I think that that's so important, because I see people, if you said to me, Jason, what are the biggest mistakes someone makes with a farm, is they start with an area that's too large and they get overwhelmed and they stop the efforts 8 months. They quit before the magic happens. And I think this is the same with acquiring land, Rosie. I mean, Gary Keller, who he told me, if you want to own 5,000 acres one day, buy one. And then start buying up the ones around it over time. And over a lifetime, you'll acquire it.
And specifically with a farm, if you start with 50 and saturate 50, and you start to move out even farther on the neighboring, you've got the people that are, their kids are going to another school because they've grown out of their elementary school. And now they're going to the junior high school, which bleeds over into the next communities surrounding it. And so you want to be strategic about it. So the elementary school kids, whether you have kids or not, I tell that to people too. You don't have to have a kid, but when you start saturating the families that live in that community, their kids get old enough to go to the junior high that bleeds into the next neighboring communities, figure out which ones they are from the school district, And then those kids graduate into the high school, figure out which neighborhoods those are, and saturate that neighborhood.
That's so smart. And that kind of leads into the next one, which is, you know, the turnover that's happening in these communities. How do you think about that?
I love this one community near my house. And I love it because the homes are absolutely stunning and they're over $1 million and they're on shy acres and they're gorgeous. But they don't turn over. So I'm not going to spend my extra money in there if they don't turn over for 7 years. I'd rather have the turnover where I can have repeat referral business. They bought and then 3 years later, they're ready. They're big. They've got a bigger family or whatever the explanation is for why they're moving. I'd rather have that as my meat and potatoes.
So on that one, it's find a community that fits into the first criteria, but has a turnover on average of every 3 years.
That's what I picked, every 3 years.
I love that. Okay, what's next?
To be able to saturate, it's expensive to market. And so I suggest every door direct mail through the U.S. Post Office. You can Google that. Look at the steps. It is so much less expensive than sending out a piece of mail.
I love that. And this kind of goes to making sure that what I'm sending is quality. And then how often am I sending it, Rosie?
I'm sending every month. In my farm, I don't think you need to do more than that. But if you do every month and every door direct mail, I send out a message that is relevant. I'm not saying spring has sprung, plant your blooms, it's time to change your smoke alarms or whatever. I am not doing that. People will toss that away. I want relevant information. So it does take me a little bit longer because I'm thinking about information, but it's going to be better for you because you're going to generate conversations that are relevant.
Okay, I'm gonna pull that thread a little bit. Give me an example of something relevant off the top of your head.
We have a serious lack of inventory, and I'm being specific to my farm where I live, and I'm going to call that farm Fairwood Renton area where I live. In Fairwood, that inventory is dangerously low. We need inventory. And because of that, we haven't lost any pricing. Our value of sales prices have stayed up. So sellers, we still are getting great prices for you and possibly even multiple bids.
I love that. So if you're tracking, I know most of y'all are listening to this while you're driving. If you're tracking, the first three here are kind of about picking the farm. The next three are about making sure that you can send on a monthly basis the mail in an economical way. Rosie, then you kind of switch gears and you get into kind of being physically present in the farm between events and HOA meetings. Talk us through that a little
bit. My favorite part, because now I get to be in my community and I love to pull the community together. And I also want to give value to the community, not take, take, take. It's thank you for your business, Fairwood. I'm going to provide a free recycle event. I'm going to provide a free shredding event in our local church parking lot. Everyone can see it as they drive past, bringing their kids to and fro and going to the store. It's right in our neighborhood. And, you know, we'll do other things like I do a girlfriend's event where I have wine and appetizers that I give for free. And we support women-owned vendors that sell their little jewelry and Tupperware and whatever else they're selling as a pop-up. And it's all about, let me give back to my community. And I have so many people give back to me now because they're like, you give so much to our neighborhood. Let me choose you as our real estate agent.
Friends, I want you to understand what you're hearing right now. You don't have the benefit of seeing Rosie. I do, though. We're face to face. The minute she started talking about giving back to her community, she's smiling ear to ear. Rosie, that might be the key. Like, this fills you up. Like, your whole demeanor changes when you talk about these neighborhoods.
Yes, it does. And remember, that's what I said 10 years ago when I started. I wanted to do something in my community. You know what? As a result of that, I was present at school. I work long hours. We all do. We all, as we own our own business, we know when we're coming home and we're going to put the kids to bed and we've made dinner, got them to bed, we're working again until about midnight or so, unless you've got it really dialed in. And I got there. I did get there. I'll tell you that. And that feels good. But at the time when I didn't have the models, the MRE models, I didn't have it dialed in. So being able to be there for my kids when they, you know, I volunteered in their school. So I got to be there present with them in their school, in their class with their teacher, and volunteering at the auction and the fun run and popcorn day. And
when you can look up and those activities are part of your farming program and they're part of your life, you've reached this symbiotic experience.
That's it. You just gave me goosebumps. That's my life. That's it. That's what I live for. I live for my kids and just enjoying that and watching them grow. And then you connect on the PTA with other parents and they become now, are they what? Your sphere or your farm? I don't care.
It's all blending together.
And you're doing what you love and you're getting paid for it. I get paid to socialize, I tell people all the time.
Did you hear what she said? Did you hear when she said, whether it's your sphere, it's your farm, I don't know which is which, and I don't care. That's it. Like, that's the moment where you stop and you completely understand why Rosie is one of the most successful geographic farmers that we've spoken to. It's because she literally thinks of everybody that lives in that farm as part of her sphere of influence. That's how this works. The lines get blurred. What is a sphere of influence anyway? Is it a list of people that know you, that you know, and that you care about, and them hope you succeed? Is that what it is? If that's what it is, and your entire geographic farm area can become that, then you have nailed everything she's talking about. Remember, there's models and systems, but then there's the thought and the thinking and the syntax behind them. In this case, it's all about moving people from stranger to database and from database to sphere of influence. I know them. I care about them. They want me to succeed. That's the true genius here.
Walk me through newspapers. You actually use newspapers as part of your voice. Some people are saying, okay, you lost me. I'm a millennial. I haven't opened the newspaper ever. How do you think about it?
All right. I am not talking the Seattle Times. I am talking in my farm. In my farm, there's a newspaper. I lucked out. Most neighborhoods don't have a newspaper. We did. The Fairwood Flyer, it was called. And I advertised in there. I got a ton of business. I was even putting recipes in there. My recipes got more talk and chatter than my real estate content.
So good. There's, by the way, community newspapers are a sneaky, sneaky way to infiltrate it.
And it was so popular that when the newspaper went out of business, because the newspaper doesn't really do well, right? The neighborhood of Fairwood complained, and then we found a magazine editor that then did a magazine called the Fairwood Magazine. And guess who's in there? I'm in there all the time, and I'm writing editorial content, newsletters, as well as advertising and recipes.
The next one here, you say check Zillow for the for sale by owners in the properties. Walk me through that.
It still exists, believe it or not. Is it successful? No, but when somebody puts their house on Zillow for sale by owner, I'm going to find it because I'm looking every single day, and every now and again in a blue moon, somebody will do that.
Talk to me about social media. How do you use Facebook as part of this play?
Well, I'm more Facebook because of my generation. And then I also have Instagram. Used to have Twitter. I don't do Twitter as much anymore, but any social media you can grab onto, do it. You want to saturate your market. So here's the beauty of social media in your farm. Your farm probably has Nextdoor, that app, Nextdoor for communities. Get on that and communicate and engage on that. Hey, I'm looking for an electrician. I know electrician. We use electrician all the time with our real estate sales. This guy's awesome. My clients love him. So always be weaving in your real estate conversation, but you're also giving content and engaging with the community. You probably have a buy nothing in your neighborhood on Facebook. Get on the buy nothing and give stuff away. I mean, I gave away, you know, my kids' toys that they didn't want anymore. And you're visible and you're also somebody who's giving value. There's also, if there is no social media, or even if there is and you want to start something different, we have something called Neighbors of Fairwood Greens that I said I live in. And so I am totally into that one because that's where it all started. And that's where I knew I dominate Fairwood Greens. I get probably 80% of the business market share in that neighborhood. Pretty incredible 20 years later. But also they have, I started my own social media and called it Positively Fairwood. And it's all about positivity and things about the neighborhood, events that are going on. I don't even stand for any negative comments. It's been great. Nobody has done negative comments, but one person did the other day about a new restaurant that opened up and said, you should be listening to your Yelp reviews. I immediately blocked them and put on my Facebook post as the moderator saying, this is a positivity. There's other places where you can vent. This is not the place. This is the time to uplift each other. And so everyone, you know, chimed in on that saying, oh yeah, that, thank you. Thank you. We need more of that. So now I've got control over what content goes in and what I put out.
I think this is the key. You say be visible. What does be visible mean to you?
Well, I want to be in the community on anything I do. So if I am doing an event, I'm going to hold it in my farm. Why not? What other better place than my farm to be visible? I joined the Golf and Country Club in our neighborhood, and I'm on the committee in there where I'm helping out. I'm on the board of directors for the Rotary in our community, on the Chamber of Commerce in our community. When they're doing events, ribbon cutting, wine crawl, pub crawl, anything, like, I'm there, I'm visible, I'm always there, right down to the grocery store. So I'm in my local grocery store in the neighborhood, and I will run into people, and I won't be the one that's hiding with my shopping cart darting around different aisles. Like, I'm going to go after it. Hey, Bill, how's it going?
Very good. I mean, you have a passion for it, but your business model demands that you are immersive in this community.
Yes. And I get that comment a lot. Like, do you ever stop? No, this is my life. I am Fairwood. They call me the mayor of Fairwood. I am living my life immersed in my neighborhood, and I love every minute of it. I want to have a legacy of contribution. I want to be an example. Let's give back to our communities and be respectful and kind and bring value. And to me, that's what it's about for me right now.
If you remember nothing else from this entire show, I want you to remember the line, the mayor of Fairwood. That's what she said. And I want you to start thinking of yourself as the mayor of your town. Who's the mayor of West Bloomfield? Who's the mayor of Austin, Texas? Who's the mayor of, you name it, West Los Angeles, and then you get into the little neighborhoods in La Playa. You are the mayor of your town. You're the mayor of your database. You're the mayor of your town. You're the mayor of your neighborhood. That's the key. She thinks about it like that every single day. It gives her energy. You have to wake up and want to be the mayor if you're going to run a successful campaign that's going to last over time. She becomes part of these people's lives and they become part of hers. That's why she is the mayor.
Now look back. 1985. I mean, just to set everyone in their time frame, that's when they were recording We Are the World. Go back to 1985 for a minute, all the way to today. Forget just business. Add in life. Because all of our lives take zigs and zags that we never expected. Rosie, what's the one or two lessons that you can share with all of our listeners today? Looking back on it all, what advice would you give us?
I think it looks easy to the people on the outside who are not doing it. This is hard work. You need to have a stomach for it, and you need to get your head in the game, and you need to treat your business as a business. The rest will come, and enjoy it. Have a passion and a joy for that. I found my joy in giving back to my community and being near families and being with my family. What I gained as a huge benefit is business becomes business. You have a listing and the listing has other business around it. They called off the sign. Your advertising made them buy another house. They saw your sign and they wanted to list their house with you. Now I'm in my community. I don't drive hardly at all. I drive just a little bit in my farm. I'm hardly ever going an hour away to service a client.
It's genius. Friends, it is genius. Rosie, we would like to invite you to the lightning round. Now, in the lightning round, we will ask you a series of questions. We want the first thing that comes into your mind. Will you play?
Oh, my goodness. Okay, here we go. Can I say no? No. Go.
Can't say no. Rosie, what's your favorite color?
Purple.
What is your favorite food?
Pasta.
Stop the lightning round. It's so good. It's so good, right? I mean,
I'm Italian.
Print it. Back into the lightning round. Rosie, do you have a favorite movie?
I do. It's not going to resonate with a lot of people, but it's Working Girl, where the secretary made it to the top. They took her serious.
So good. I love that. What's your favorite sound? Is there a noise that you just love to hear?
It's no noise. It's calm.
Sound of quiet. I love that. You're not the first to mention that one. Matter of fact, if you haven't heard the episode where Ben Kinney talks about the sound of silence, it's a great thing to hear.
Is there a song about that?
Rosie, you're well read. Is there a book? It doesn't have to be your favorite, but is there one book that you'd recommend to our audience? Not the MREA or the one thing, but is there a book?
Those were my two.
I get it. Is there one that's made an impact on you that you think we might want to have on our reading list?
You probably already have it. The Giver. I don't remember who wrote it. It's a small book, but it talks about you give back and you get tenfold. And I'm here to tell you, I'm a testament. It works.
There it is. Last question, Rosie. Where is the best place to vacation?
Palm Springs. I'm here now.
Palm Springs. There it is, friends. Rosie, you are an amazing friend to all real estate agents. Thank you on behalf of every consumer that you've helped, and more importantly, everyone that you will help. It's an honor for us to have you.
Thank you, Jason.
There it is, friends. We've made it. That's the end of another show of the Millionaire Real Estate Agent Podcast. It's so simple. Isn't it so simple? Every single time we have one of these shows, I am reminded of how simple it is. Rosie talks about choosing the right farm area and starting small, right? Pick a place with 50 homes. Ultimately, let it get as big as it needs to. Then she talks about sending the right stuff, and the right stuff that actually has value. It's not about the quantity, it's about the quality. She mentions becoming the mayor of this geographic farm area. And by the way, here's the secret sauce that brings this entire Big Mac of life together. She wakes up every day and wants to do it. Friends, that is one of the keys from every single person that we've had on this show. They found the thing that they want to be spending their time doing within the real estate industry. Some of them love throwing parties. Some of them love doing social media videos. Rosie loves being in her community, thriving with the people that are in it, watching people grow to become the best versions of themselves, and then helping them not just have firsts, but every single life event along the way. That's what fills her up. You see her smile and her entire face changes when she starts talking about being part of these communities, helping at the school, being at the charity events. She literally lifts off her chair in excitement. Is that you? Are you someone who wakes up every day and that sounds like the greatest thing in the world? Because if it is, you should be running a geographic farm. Friends, figure out what you love, then do it passionately. Go forth and do likewise. There it is. That wraps another episode. Friends, I don't know what you're taking out of this. I really don't. I'll tell you what I want you to be taking out of it, which is these are the people that are having tremendously big lives. And the reason it's happening is because they're setting up the models and systems to do just that. Gary Keller told me that leadership is teaching people how to think so that they do the things they need to do when they need to do them, so that ultimately they get the things they want when they want to have them. And that's what I want for you. You're all leaders, but it begins with leading ourselves. If you're enjoying this podcast, I want you to click the subscribe button anywhere that you get your podcasts. We want to be the voice in your head every single week. And every week we're dropping new content. We also send out a newsletter at the conclusion of every show to make sure that you get the highest points and the models and systems that were discussed. So if you want to sign up, I need your name and your email address. head over to the MillionaireAgentPodcast.com. MillionaireAgentPodcast.com. Enter your name and your email address, and every week that newsletter will be in your box. Friends, you just went on a journey. I hope that what happens between now and the next time we meet is absolutely wonderful for you. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next week.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not KWRI and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information. Warning. You must comply with the TCPA and any other federal, state, or local laws, including for B2B calls and texts. Never call or text a number on any do not call list, and do not use an auto dialer or artificial voice or pre-recorded messages without proper consent. Contact your attorney to ensure your compliance.